Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Continuing with my colleague and friend Craig Unger, his new book, Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. Bob Perry finds a treasure trove and immediately begins to answer questions about, there's Bill Casey, and over here is the allegation. In between is a network. And we'll touch on some of this network because it begins to explain how this was put together. Casey's a genius. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing is a simple version of him. At the same time, he's described by people who saw him in action as frantic, always behind. I think of him as Alice's rabbit. He's always running to something else and doesn't disclose anything. He has allies and friends, people who admire him. Importantly is John Shaheen. Importantly is a safari club. Importantly is that all of these men and their colleagues have connections to arms dealers, to money laundering, to international intrigue, to men who change their biographies and present themselves as one thing when in fact they're frauds and something else. There are no hard answers here, but there is Bill Casey managing this. Craig, John Shaheen's important. The Hashemis are important. We'll touch on them. A man named Sensi's important. What is the Safari Club?
The Safari Club is a group of intelligence, high-level intelligence officials. And in the mid-70s, there was a huge crackdown on the CIA. There was the Church Committee and the Pike Committee, which investigated CIA abuses and found that there had been coup d'etats by the CIA in Syria, I believe in 1949, in Iran famously in 1953, in Guatemala in 54, later in the Dominican Republic and Vietnam and so forth. Huge number of illegal operations, and there was a big crackdown. Once that happened, many people were forced out of the CIA as a result, especially after Jimmy Carter came in. And the Safari Club sort of came up. It was started in part by Alexandre de Marange, the head of French intelligence and a close ally of Casey. And it brought together people from Saudi intelligence, from all over the world to do international operations that were off the books. So suddenly, the kind of operations the CIA had done before Jimmy Carter were now being done off the books. And that's part of what the Safari Club did.
And that begins to describe what October Surprise is, off the books. We mentioned
Absolutely. That
Dick Allen, Richard Allen, was the an advisor to Ronald Reagan's campaign with a list of distinguished names, all of whom served in the Reagan administration advising. It was Dick Allen who came up with the name October Surprise Group. It was partly a joke. It was wry. You know, Carter's going to have to surprise us in some fashion. But it became the legend of October Surprise. Bill Casey didn't invent it, but he is responsible for it. Who are the Hashemis?
The Hashemi were Iranian brothers who were arms dealers, essentially, and they had connections with Iran, and they approached Jimmy Carter as soon as the hostages were taken and said, look, we still have good relations in Iran with the new regime. We can help win the release of the hostages. What Jimmy Carter did not know, and this is one of the things I discovered, was that they had known Bill Casey since the mid-70s. So they were essentially double agents who were really working for Casey, and the Carter administration did not realize that.
They were a source of information for Bill Casey, and Casey discovered them. Casey knew them beforehand. Do we have that, Craig?
Yes, we absolutely have that. In fact, there'd been an oil refinery in Newfoundland called the Come By Chance Oil Refinery. And it was it was owned by John Shaheen, who was Casey's best friend. He was an oil millionaire in New York. It was an odd place to have an oil refinery, and it never really worked as a business. But it appears to have been a front for a lot of the money that went into this operation. And the Hashemi's banks were used to finance that oil refinery. And Bill Casey was consulted as a lawyer, and I found documents to that effect in the mid-70s.
John Shaheen is I'm glad you mentioned him. Not only a bankroller, but a man who brings people together and was extremely loyal to Bill Casey. Is that correct, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. They attended reunions of the OSS every time they could. They were very, very close. Shaheen was a fairly low profile figure. And in most of the reporting on this, he barely surfaced at all. And to me, he became enormously important because he was Bill Casey's cutout. In espionage, if you're doing a covert operation, you can't be seen meeting with all the principals all the time. And Bill Casey, remember, he was in the limelight. He was in the media spotlight 24/7. He's running a presidential campaign, and he can't be seen meeting with Iranian arms dealers. So it was John Shaheen who was doing that. And one of the great breakthroughs in this came because the FBI was investigating the Hashemis for illegal arms dealing, and they were wiretapping them. And it took many, many years for me to get those wiretaps. But what would happen is you would hear them talking to John Shaheen, and then they'd go out and do an arms deal. And I have to presume, since Shaheen was so close to Casey, that this is how things were going on. Casey would talk to Shaheen, who would talk to the Hashemis, and then the arms deals would take place.
We're going very fast. This takes years. Perry discovers those files in 94. It isn't until he gets to the Bush Library in 2011 that he begins to, and then again in June of 2013, he left us in 2018, that we have these details that Craig is giving. The wiretaps are amazing. They're like, if they didn't exist, you'd say it was fiction, but there they are. Now, another connection that I think is important here is to understand is Israel. In 92, for the Village Voice, I believe, you traveled to Israel and met the man Hevroni, who was supervising Ben Menashe, and you also met the man Sagi, who was supervising Hevroni. This is not Mossad, it's not Shin Bet, it's something called Amman. What is that?
That's Israeli military intelligence, and it's very important when it comes to arms dealing. And essentially, even though Ben Menashe was in many ways a very unreliable character, he did report directly to them. And I had to go there in person and track them down and get them to tell me that. And they did confirm that Ben Menashe worked directly for them. And they were able to, that in effect solidified my reporting that there was this secret arms channel of arms sales going from Israel to Iran. And that was a big, big secret. Israel did not want it known. I mean, I think it's one reason I got so much pushback in this and why so many reporters were discredited. You wonder why Seymour Hersh said you're going to get crushed over this. Well, the bottom line on this is that Israel participated in a covert operation that sabotaged an American presidential election. And we're supposed to be allies. They're not supposed to do that to us. And they did not want that out.
There were other connections, but Craig has mentioned an important one here. Desmarange, the head of Desambureau, or something even more secretive, I don't know.
Forgive my French. It's the SDG. See, I'm going to get it screwed. It's essentially the French CIA. He was the top dog in French intelligence. And he helped put together meetings in Paris in late October that were essential for this. And he also helped put in stage some of the arms deals.
Yeah, let's get to those two meetings. Craig's mentioned them before. But one of the roadblocks that you meet in the 90s Gosh, Greg, we're referring to the 20th century. We're as old as Methuselah to be able to do this. So
we're getting on.
In the 90s, you saw the roadblock was Casey wasn't in Madrid. Bush wasn't in Paris. What are you going to do about it? And they walk away from you, which is fair enough. So let's start with Madrid. July 28 and 29, Casey was in London for OSS reunion. And there is a chart kept by one of the conveners of the reunion of who attended and who didn't. It's reproduced in Craig's book. You can see it. The chart is not definitive, although Newsweek and then the investigation by the House and Senate both took it as demonstration that Casey was in London the whole time. There was also the suggestion that he was at a club in San Francisco. There was also the suggestion that he couldn't have been there. He was, well, somebody testified he was with him. All of these are people's memories can be imperfect. We're not looking at sinister here. But what Craig's book does is it lays out how it is that people were assuming information was fixed and it wasn't. So they were always looking for a way to excuse Casey. We know now that Casey was in Madrid and he met with a man named Karubi. Why?
Well, he was setting up the October surprise deal. Yeah, he met with Mehdi Karubi, who was a high-ranking Islamic cleric in July 28th, I believe, in Madrid in 1980. And that's where the original parameters of the October surprise deal were sketched out. And that's where Casey first asked Karubi when the hostages would be released, and he wanted to make sure it would be after the election, not as soon as possible, but after the election.
When we come back, we're going to turn to the Paris meeting because that involves a president of the United States. Very important. The book is Den of Spies, Reagan, Carter, and the Secret History of the Treason That Stole the White House. Craig Unger is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.